I'm Christian Schiller. Welcome to my podcast, an enthusiastic ramble through whatever has taken my interest the past week or so. Expect technology, games, history, travel, geekery, and as always, much, much more. I'm Christian Schiller. Welcome to Chinchilla Squeaks. I am recording in a sound booth at latitude 59 right now in Tallinn in Estonia. It's going to sound different, as things always do on the road. This is a links show, a news show. I've got a few things I want to share with you, and then I will get out of your way. First, I am going to share actually another podcast episode from one that I actually shared a couple of episodes ago as well. I don't know. They've just been having some really interesting guests on recently. This is another Mac Power Users episode, Inventing the Future with John Buck. He was from Sydney in Australia, and I like to pick some of these people sometimes on American shows because they just give a different perspective, which is one thing I really like. Not always Americans is nice. And he published a book covering the Apple Technology Group, a division within Apple that looked into sort of strange random projects and seeing where they would lead, including QuickTime, which I still use. I think a lot of people don't use it as much as they used to, but it's still sort of there beneath the surface on a Mac. And, you know, I like a bit of computer history. Anybody who's ever listened to this show knows that I enjoy a bit of computing history. And I just really enjoyed hearing his process. I think one of the things I found interesting with their non-US guests versus the US guests is the non-US guests quite often are very much more focused on... Be careful how I say this thing here. Let's say a lot of the time with the American guests, they're always using the latest and greatest tools and like to talk about that. Whereas with the non-US guests, they tend to just focus on what it is they're doing, which I don't know. I don't know what that says about what exactly, but it's kind of an interesting perspective. But it was a cool episode. I enjoyed it. I actually want to go and dig out the book now as well. On the subject of computing history, there's actually a bit of a thread here that I didn't really spot until I just started explaining things. This was on ZDNet by Ed Bott. Dell turns 40. And Dell is still around, of course. Dell still makes a lot of machines, but one of the things that was groundbreaking about them in the first place, 40 years ago in 1984, from Michael Dell, named after its founder. I don't know if he's still involved with the company very much. I'm not sure. But how he took things in a very interesting direction. At the time, computers always had to be sold through distributors, and you had to have these kind of networks of shops and distributors and retailers to sell your computers. And his groundbreaking accomplishment was to do direct to consumer, which made things a lot cheaper. I don't think that's still the case now. It's probably a bit broader. And I mean, selling direct to consumer is not that unusual these days. In fact, buying in a store is probably more unusual. But that's basically what he did. And it went very quickly. They would actually assemble their own machines to begin with. And then in 1 year, they made $60 million in annual sales. And 4 years later, $85 million. And actually, 2000 was their peak, which I think was the same for a lot of people. But they're still going. I think a lot of people respect Dell laptops still. A lot of Dell desktops, I think people forget they exist too. A lot of people focus on the laptops. And 40 years later, it's hard to know if they're doing better or worse comparing to kind of modern numbers, but the article kind of goes through the entire history, their various stock changes, going public and not going public, and et cetera, which is always weird that that's possible, that you can kind of delist yourself. The XPS laptops are very popular, and here we go. So here's the final sort of section stating their status right now. They still sell very well. They still resell services. And they currently have, 133,000 employees worldwide, $101 billion in revenue, including a lot of sales. And they also span off VMware to Broadcom last year, which see my recent episodes on KubeCon for more thoughts on that. But actually, they sold off for $67 billion, which is kind of wild that most of a large percentage of their income for the past couple of years has come from that sell-off. And all started of an investment 40 years ago for $1,000. I don't think many people can say anything similar. Another quick history thing. This is the register, and this is something people may have forgotten about. 10 years ago, Microsoft bought Nokia's phone unit and then killed it as a tax write-off. Nokia's were still being made by OMD Global up until relatively recently, if not still are. They sort of come and go. But before that, Windows phones were mostly Microsoft devices. And they were very good. They were very popular, but they just did not get the attention that many argue they deserved. And the reason this came into my mind was actually because I have been thinking a lot about Nokia recently. I'm currently in Estonia, as I mentioned. Nokia were ostensibly a Finnish company. And when they massively downsized, sort of 10 to 15 years ago, it led to a lot of engineers and product people and et cetera, needing new work and trickling out into various companies across Europe. And I've been thinking about this a lot recently and thinking I'd actually like to do some, I'm not really sure what the content would be yet, but some content around this, actually. So seeing this article related to, I guess, the tail end of that. You know, this is Microsoft even selling off what they'd bought when Nokia downsized. It just sparked that memory in my mind. And I even worked for a period of time. I had a contract for a period of time at a company based in Berlin, which was also an ex-Nokia company that is now owned by a car conglomerate, I think. That's HERE Maps, sort of business-to-business maps. And there's also things like Qt, WebOS, all sort of came out of Nokia originally, and where all these people have gone now, so including the handset division. So, yeah, it's like the long tail of a company that had its fingers everywhere for a period of time, and then suddenly it didn't anymore. Okay, I have to get to the AI news. Of course, we cannot have any kind of tech content anymore without AI. I'm going to focus on things that are not so good. First one, and I am not surprised that this has taken so long. This is sort of related. This isn't really featured in this article per se, but earlier in the month, OpenAI announced a partnership with Stack Overflow. This is not surprising. I wouldn't be surprised if they were actually unofficially getting a lot of data from them anyway, so it would make sense to get it officially to feed various OpenAI services, I guess. But coinciding with that, a lot of Stack Overflow, I don't know what they call people, members, writers, commenters, I suppose, were actually upset that their work, and it's mostly volunteers, that their work is now just going to feed this huge profitable machine, and were editing their posts to basically protest this, which is, of course, as may or may not surprise you, in violation of the terms and conditions of Stack Overflow. But Stack Overflow were not particularly sympathetic to this, I guess because of the partnership, and they're probably doing quite well out of that partnership, and rather ham-fistedly kind of undoing and, in some extent, barring some of these users, which is unfortunate, seeing as those users will be feeding the machine, you know, and they will feed the hand that feeds the machine, if that makes sense. I'm not sure if that's a bit of a tortured analogy, but yeah, we'll see what happens. I sort of wonder, Stack Overflow is struggling in this space at the moment. They attempted to create their own kind of AI tools to a little bit of fanfare last summer, and they didn't really hear much about it since, so I guess it was a little bit too late. And doing things like this is just probably going to push people away. It's kind of one of those platforms that for so long was so unanimous with getting information to problems of all sorts of varieties. It's not just technology, of course. And you know, they've become slowly less relevant, and then annoying the very people who give you the content in the first place is not a solution. And how they're going to handle this in the future, I'm not sure. But it was interesting. Of course, a lot of people quoted GDPR rules, saying they wanted to be forgotten and this kind of thing. So this is going to be a longer conversation. So I found it quite interesting. And this is on a Bleeping Computer, a website I've not heard of before. So have a look at that and tell me what you think, actually. And finally, on 404 Media by Samantha Cole. Here's a quote that I think sums this up. This is from a small publisher, and I've been submitting a lot to small publishers recently. The problem with AI is the people who use AI, they don't respect the written word, the founder of Bards and Sages said. I have been submitting to a lot of these small presses recently. They consistently have warnings and disclaimers about not wanting AI-generated content at all. And I think this is why, because you just end up with so much material that you need to go through, and it can be derivative, but anything between derivative, copyright infringing, or just terrible. And some of these smaller publishers, including Bards and Sages, have just said they can't cope. They can't cope anymore. Even if you do have disclaimers, it's just too much to go through. So they are done. And this is a little bit niche. This is actually a small publisher for speculative fiction and role-playing games. Not exactly even a big name press or publisher that probably would be getting hundreds of thousands of submissions even before AI. So even if a smaller outlet is saying too much, then it says a lot, I think. And it kind of causes problems for the rest of us who do actually want to legitimately submit content. Now, we can't either because the drawbridge is up, as it were, which I think is suiting to the content of the publication. So Veil, RIP, let's hope we find ways to sort of filter this in the long run. So that was my news for this episode. I hope the sound quality wasn't too odd, kind of hollow mic or a hollow room, but there we go. What's it news from me? I'm publishing actually quite a few videos. I'm clearing a bit of a backlog. I have a video covering Superbooth 2024 last weekend, which is a music technology event in Berlin. I have a video related to that, looking at removing duplicate audio plugins, which is the bane of many a DAW user's existence. And I have a video looking at some new Descript features, which I use for editing my podcast. So all a bit meta there. Head on over to my YouTube channel to find all of those. I have been Christian Schiller. You can always find more about me at christianschiller.com. Thank you very much for joining me. And as always, take care, everybody.
I hope you enjoyed the show. Find out more about me at christianschiller.com, where you can find show notes, sign up for my newsletter, and find all of my writing, games, work, and video links. There's also details on how to get in touch with me. And if you want to get even closer to what I do, join my Discord server for behind-the-scenes discussions and helping me produce my shows and work.